Hi, I'm Michael Dunn, and this is the Oregon Rainmakers Podcast. My guest today is Rick Wright, the owner and CEO of Market of Choice. For many people in our community, Market of Choice is their market. We're going to talk about Rick's career, the company, and the evolution of grocery stores over the years. Rick, welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for jumping on. So why don't we start at the beginning? How did you get to be in the grocery industry? Tell us about sort of your evolution in this.
Well, I was pretty much born into the industry. My father was in the grocery business since he was 14 years old. He got a job when he was, like I said, 14. His mom came home from a grand opening store down in Whittier, California. I believe it was a Mayfair store. She told him to go put on your brother's shirt and tie because he didn't have a shirt and tie. And go down and get a job. He did, and that ended up being a lifelong career for him.
Wow. So then, you know, kind of growing up, I mean, obviously in the industry, kind of what were some of the lessons your dad imparted? And kind of tell us how you got from Whittier, California to Oregon.
Yeah, so I think we took a vacation when I might have been in third grade to Oregon.
Okay.
Never went home.
Wow.
Literally, my mom and the kids stayed up in Oregon, and my dad went home. Sold the house and we moved to Oregon. They just fell in love with the state. Yeah. And so we've been here ever since. And so along the way, my dad ended up buying his own store back in about 1979 in Cottage Grove. And so I grew up helping open that store, run the store, and went off to college. Ended up when I left college to go to work for his competitors, and not actually a direct competitor, but I went to work for another grocery company. And so it was a number of years later when he came by one day and said, "You ever thinking about coming back to work for me?"
Wow.
And so I came back to work for him.
So what was your first job working for your dad?
So when I came back, my first job was a buyer.
Okay.
So I came back and I was pretty much buying for a number of the departments. But I immediately started taking on a lot of other responsibilities.
Okay. When you're a buyer for a grocery store, I imagine, do you get to select like the vendors that you're going to buy from and kind of, because obviously Market of Choice, so much of your stock and trade is local produce and local products that you offer to customers. Is that kind of where it started for you?
Yeah, it all started actually when we bought the store at 29th Willamette.
Okay.
And so that store, which you call your store.
I do.
And a lot of people call their store as well. That store, when we first acquired it, we were known as Price Chopper back then.
Okay.
And we bought the store, cleaned it up, reopened the store as a Price Chopper. And the customers from South Eugene immediately told us, it's nice that it's cleaner, but you don't carry the products that we like to buy. So we started listening to them and saying, well, what are the products you like to buy? And so we started bringing those products in. And along the way, I came up with this idea of Market of Choice. We didn't know that was going to be our name at the time, but I knew that there was this hybrid concept of being able to bring in a lot of local products, a lot of organics and naturals, but selling them side by side with conventional products and putting them all under one roof, along with some food service and a lot of the other departments that we have. And so over about a 2 or 3 year period, the idea of Market of Choice started coming around.
As you were sort of building this idea and you hit on something that one of the biggest differences, I think, that many people in our community and why they choose Market of Choice is just what you said. You could go there and get a pretty obscure product that is very organic or very vegan, but you can also get, you know, a Diet Coke or something like that. So take me through a little bit of that strategy of kind of being able to get, I guess it's sort of meeting of two types of consumers to provide something that obviously, you know, is something wanted by your customers.
Yeah, so during that period of time when we were kind of developing the concept of Market of Choice, it became evident that a lot of the consumers who were shopping at a natural food store were also going to a conventional store and buying a lot of conventional products.
Okay.
And we found out that a good portion of people who were buying organic and natural also had either a sweet tooth or a product that they desired that they had to go to a conventional supermarket for. And along the way, we just decided that, what if we could just give them everything?
Yeah.
And it's not like we can give everything because there's only so much, you know, shelving in
sure.
a store. But we were able to blend the best of both worlds into this, and then find those eclectic items that you're talking about, the very unique items.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I'm always fascinated with is, you know, we're probably around the same age and stuff. And obviously, when we were much younger, grocery stores, you know, were kind of, you know, fairly uniform in terms of, yeah, you went there to get your food and that was kind of it. But, you know, and then if you wanted those obscure items, you went to a kind of a specialty store. And we'll talk more about sort of the evolution of the grocery store industry, but just your own personal reflection in terms of, you know, when you started to what Market of Choice is now. When you were, you know, just starting out, could you imagine that your store would be the way that it is today? Or do you look back on your career and go, that was a big surprise?
No, it was a big surprise. And it was actually a blessing because I wanted something to do that was exciting in the grocery industry. I just didn't want to do the same thing. And yes, you're right. I mean, when I grew up in the industry, it was all a package product industry. I mean, everything we sold and mostly everything we bought and sold was a package product. And we never had the idea that we would be, because right now Market of Choice is a manufacturer as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a manufacturing facility here in Eugene. We manufacture in each store. So we're not just a retailer anymore. In fact, a lot of times when people ask me what I do, I say I'm a manufacturer first before I say I'm a retailer. So we make a lot of products. And did I ever think that we're going to go there? No. Hmm. Never had any idea that I would be a manufacturer. But so after the 29th and Willamette Street store, we ended up acquiring the store over on campus on Franklin Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And when we had to remodel that store, I bought this pizza oven that had flames, and you could see the flames from no, excuse me, it wasn't a pizza. It was a rotisserie. It was a rotisserie that we did. And I remember buying that piece of equipment and not discussing it with my father at the time. And I remember him walking into that store and asking me how much that piece of equipment cost. And I told him, and he said, I think my entire store costs less than that, the first store I ever built. So, and then when we opened the store and people fell in love with it, and the idea that there's some theatrics going on in the store and there's seeing things being made, my dad fell in love with it. And his next comment was, when are you going to put one in every one of our stores? So it went from a store needs to be very uniform and you just have to have equipment to let's try things and let's have fun with it.
Sure. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, and certainly like as we've talked before, you know, you've done a lot of different jobs for Market of Choice and in the industry. And is there a job that's your favorite, you know, in terms of you started out as a buyer, like you said, you know, was that a fun job or were there other jobs that you did where you're like, wow, this really is the sweet spot for me and what I like to do?
Actually, I don't know if there's one that I love the most, but you're right. I've got to do everything basically, from unloading trucks to driving forklifts to, you know, I've done it all.
Sure.
I've worked throughout the store. I'm not a master meat cutter or anything like that,
sure.
But I can do a lot of the different things that we do in our stores. But, and as a role of a CEO today, my role as a CEO of my company is so different than if I was a CEO of somebody else's company.
Okay.
I design the stores. I do all their real estate deals. I still work with the buyers sometimes. I love buying. I wish I could go back to doing more buying. It's just, it's not really in my role anymore, especially like the wine department and the beer department.
Okay.
What better job is there?
Sure.
You get to be a buyer of all the craft beers that are made throughout the Northwest. So yeah, there's a lot of roles but the good thing about my career is that I've got to do so many things that I don't get bored with it because, you know, if I'm designing a store, it gets a little bit tiring towards the end of the process when we're almost ready to open the store because I've been putting my life into it, but then it's open and I get to move on to something else.
Sure.
And so.
Sure. Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun. Was there an element, I imagine, you know, buying oftentimes has to do a lot with relationship building. Was there something as a buyer that created sort of that life lesson that you use today as CEO?
You're absolutely right. I mean, it especially a little bit time back, relationships were very important in buying. You had certain sales reps that you worked with that they would take care of you. You would take care of them. Sure. And we built a lot of relationships that way. Same thing with some of the farms we buy from. some of the craft producers of products that we buy from as well. You know, it's all about building a relationship and the trust with them. And, you know, we like to be a good payer. We like to pay our vendors sure. on time.
Sure.
We like, you know, it's just a really important relationship that you build with people.
Nice, nice. Well, we're talking with Rick Wright, the owner and CEO of Market of Choice. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back.
I'm Barbara Dellenbach, host of KLCC's Oregon Grapevine. Eric Richardson is a community advocate and former executive director of the Eugene Springfield NAACP. On the Oregon Grapevine, Eric talks about music, mental health, and democracy.
And what's next for America is hearing from women, having women leadership, gaining the valuable lessons that Maya Angelou and that Dr. King and others were trying to give to us and actually put them into place.
Community activism and political thought on KLCC's newest Oregon Grapevine.
And we're back talking with Rick Wright, the owner and CEO of Market of Choice. You know, gosh, I think that one of the things about Market of Choice, and I said it in the intro, you know, a lot of people, you know, think of it as their market, and certainly think of it as a real piece of our community. You talked about designing the store yourself. What were some of the elements that you wanted to design that perhaps different than your traditional market? What were some of the guiding principles as you literally, you know, pen to paper or whatever you used to design that store? What was kind of your strategy going forward with that?
So the 20th and Willamette store is actually the very first store we got to build from ground up.
Okay.
Everything else that we've, except for my father's very first store
okay.
back in the 70s, that was the very first store, the first store that we got to design from ground up. And the opportunity to get to start from a, you know, clean slate
yeah.
was great. So we went through the process of trying to find an architect that could, you know, inspire us and we can inspire them to design something that didn't feel like a grocery store.
Yeah.
And so we were able to accomplish that. We hired TBG Architects from Eugene, and they really had this idea of creating a Northwest feel in a building that was inspiring to the Northwest and could work as a retail facility, but also not feel like you're walking into a big box store.
Sure.
So we went through that process. It was super exciting. And I think the final product is exactly what we wanted. We wanted a store that we didn't want to have a store that when you walked in, you were bombarded with advertisement and you were bombarded with signage that says this is produce and this is meat and all that stuff. We wanted a store that when you walked in the store, it was pretty obvious where the produce was. And you know, sure. if we do a good job merchandising product, we don't need to have signs telling you
this. And it seems like in that design, as you mentioned, it has a great Northwest feel. It's very open and airy. And the outside, the front of the store is quite different than maybe a traditional store where you kind of walk in, there are the carts, maybe there's a mailbox and a trash can, and then you just kind of go through. But yours is quite different. It's almost like it's like the front of the store is a cafe, if you will.
Right. It's a courtyard, basically. We decided to build a courtyard out front where people could gather. The one thing that we found out about our South Eugene store was that people liked to take the time to talk to their neighbors when sure. they ran into their neighbors in their store. So we wanted to give them places where they could feel that they could do that without being in the way of other customers. So we created the outdoor courtyard. And the one thing that always makes me nervous about things out in the front of the store is the fact that you have cars nearby.
Sure.
And that always worries me. So I asked TBG if they could figure out a way to make it feel comfortable and safe. And so they came up with the rock wall systems that we have out front
yeah.
to create a little safer feel than if you're just sitting on the curb next to a car.
Sure, sure. And not having any expertise in the grocery industry, I would imagine that with something like that, where it's very comfortable and inviting, it makes sound business principle in terms of chances are customers are going to be at the store perhaps longer than perhaps a traditional grocery store, and that may be good for your bottom line, but also I imagine that's good for, you know, which I imagine you rely heavily on, is kind of that word of mouth advertising. Oh, you need to check this store out. It's beautiful. It's, you know, we can have coffee. We can, you know, there's a fireplace going, kind of a thing.
Certainly, especially pre-COVID. I mean, people spent a lot of time at our store, and people would come to our store often.
Yeah.
I mean, many trips a week. You know, COVID has changed people's shopping, and they, you know, you wanted to get in and out as fast as you could.
Sure.
And you don't hang around as much, but it's starting to come back.
Yeah.
Our outdoor areas are starting to get used a lot more. Our indoor seating areas are starting to get used. So, I mean, I hope we're working back towards that feel of having that community space where sure. people could get together.
Sure. Well, you brought up the C word, so let's talk about that, because I feel like during COVID, especially pre-vaccines, you know, a lot of attention was on first responders and the medical community and stuff as being, you know, first responders. But obviously, you know, grocery stores are part of everyone's life. It's incredibly important. And so your employees in many ways were first responders. Talk about how you managed through, especially the initial stages of COVID.
Well, the initial stages for us was a little unique in the fact that I actually was in New York at the end of February of 2020, staying in a hotel that had a lot of the airline employees staying at it from some international flights.
Okay.
And I recognized that these folks, already by late February, were all wearing masks and they were all social distancing. They didn't want to get in an elevator with you.
Hmm.
And so when I got home back to Eugene and COVID started to become more and more in the news, I actually took it pretty serious because I was like, wow, these folks are taking it serious.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. And I was lucky enough to get on a Zoom call back when I didn't even know what Zoom was.
Exactly.
And I had the opportunity to listen to a Chinese retailer and then a European retailer, and they were already way ahead of us in designing how their facilities would operate. And I learned about plexiglass shields at check stands and social distancing. And even, you know, the Chinese at the time were requiring their employees to wear like these plastic suits and goggles and some of that stuff. So we started implementing those. So Donnie Morgan, who's the maintenance manager over at our 29th Willamette store, and myself, we built the first plexiglass shield probably in the United States.
Wow.
In one of our check stands. And then we put a checker in it, and customers didn't want to go to it because they didn't understand what was going on, and they didn't understand. They thought that there was something wrong with that.
Oh, I see.
So we were a little ahead of the game, but I kept a checker in there anyways. I wanted to get people used to it. And we also started putting tape on the floor and trying to get people to understand what that distancing was. Then we brought in hand wash stations out front. And, you know, but your comment about our employees being the frontline workers, you're absolutely right. They were the superheroes. I mean, they were, you know, along with healthcare workers and a lot of other fields, we don't really have a choice to work from home.
Yeah.
So we need to be at the store. And it's our employees are the superheroes. I'll tell you what another department is, HR. I mean, having to work through all of the absences and all of the contact tracing and all of the duties that are responsible for a business like ours during COVID, it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine, too, that some of the lessons that you learned from that are probably a lot of feedback from employees saying, hey, this would work or you know, kind of this would make the job easier while we're socially distancing, stuff like that. And you just mentioned your HR department. I imagine there was a lot of kind of, you know, learning together on how to make this all sort of work.
Right. You know, a lot of the rules that came from the state or from OSHA basically were things that us as retailers developed along the way.
Hmm.
Then they said, yeah, that's a good idea. We should implement that statewide.
Interesting.
So we were implementing those things. We were implementing contact tracing before it was required, just because we felt like we needed to know if we had a sick employee, who else was around that employee.
Sure.
I mean, it's been amazing. The stats on how many absences and missed shifts we've had in our company over the last 2.5 years is mind-boggling.
Wow.
And it continues today, to be honest.
Sure. Well, switching gears a little bit, you talk about innovating during COVID, but obviously you've done a lot of innovation with several of the programs that you do that, you know, promote localism and stuff. Talk about some of the programs we've already talked about, when we first met, Mojo and the Dig Local. Talk about some of those programs and how that kind of continues the brand and the philosophy of Market of Choice.
So Mojo is a program that we developed where we help small manufacturers of products get their products into our stores.
Okay.
And it sounds very simple, but for a lot of these small craftspeople, they're the CEO, they're their bookkeeper,
sure.
they're everything. And the last thing they need to be doing is being the delivery person of their product.
Yeah.
So we've found a way, and we have trucks going to our stores daily back to our distribution center here in Eugene. And when they're coming back, they're mostly empty.
Yeah.
So we've found the opportunity to find manufacturers who can create a product, and if they can get it to one of my locations, I can get it to all of my locations. So we help them find the distribution that they need so that their product can get some shelf space.
Wow, wow. And then what's the Dig Local? Talk about that.
So Dig Local is how we help local farms get product into our stores as well. And for the longest time, it's been trying to find a farm that's close to our stores,
okay.
and then that one farm may serve only one store or maybe a few of our stores. But recently, we've found that we can also combine Dig Local and Mojo together, and for some farmers, if they can drop it off at our distribution center, we can get it to all of our stores as
wow.
well.
Wow,
so it's just a way of us helping a lot of these very, very simple companies that are just trying to find the opportunity, but they just don't have the manpower themselves to get out and get at every one of our locations. So we can do it for them.
Yeah, that's neat. So we're talking with Rick Wright. He's the owner and CEO of Eugene's own Market of Choice. We'll be back in just a second.
Well, as the years go by, you realize that the things that you use every day are not there by magic. They are there because somebody else took the time to build them, to maintain them. So if you're thinking about what to do with a vehicle you no longer need, when you donate it, it's going to be part of something even bigger than yourself.
Get all the details at our website, klcc.org.
And we're back talking with Rick Wright, the owner and CEO of Market of Choice. So kind of looking at the industry as a whole and, you know, kind of we're still in COVID, but obviously it's perhaps better than it used to be. But, you know, there are other challenges as well that are probably impacting the industry and impacting business in general. You know, it's a tight labor market, supply chain issues. You know, talk about sort of as the CEO, what keeps you up at night these days?
The thing that keeps me up at night these days is making sure all my equipment runs.
Okay.
Because when you talk about supply chain problems, the parts to keep a refrigeration system sometime could take 9 months to
wow.
get a part.
Wow.
Well, you don't have 9 months. You don't even really have 90 minutes. You need to get that piece of refrigeration up and running again.
Okay.
So, yeah, we spend a lot of time searching for parts.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Is the fact that a lot of your products that you're able to source local, is that a bit of a cheat code to kind of, you know, perhaps make you less reliant on some of the supply chain issues that might be affecting a much larger national chain?
It is in a way, but also a lot of our small manufacturers are experiencing this same supply chain problem.
Okay.
For example, a chip manufacturer couldn't get bags for a few months.
Oh, wow.
And basically one of our best-selling chips was not available for a period of time. You know, it's those types of things we're all experiencing.
Sure.
I mean, if for us, the size of company we are, you know, if we use a certain packaging for a product and we've built all of our programs around that package and then the next time we go to buy it, we can't get that anymore. So we have to start all over. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
But it is a little bit of an insulation for us to have
okay.
to have the local manufacturers close by.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, we try to be a good partner with them.
Okay.
So when they have supply chain problems, hopefully we get their product before they're willing to sell it to somebody else, because hopefully we take better care of them.
Sure.
So
sure.
along with that, and the fact that we actually have our own distribution center here in Eugene, we expanded it. We doubled the size of it during the pandemic because we knew that there was going to always be a supply chain problem going forward.
Yeah.
The pandemic has exacerbated it, but it always existed.
Okay.
And so we wanted to have a little bit more local control of okay. some of the products we sell.
Okay. Okay. Makes sense. What about the difficulty in finding workers? Has that been impacting you, or kind of how have you been able to manage through that problem?
Yes, it's changing the way we do business. It's changing the way everybody does business right now. So
yeah.
definitely, we're still We're still, you know, 200 to 300 employees short of where we were fully employed prior to the pandemic.
Okay.
And in some ways we've learned to live with now all those employees, but we need more. There's certainly about it. We unfortunately have departments that have to close early.
Okay.
Departments that don't open every day of the week.
Okay.
You know, and there's things that we used to manufacture that we don't make today. A lot of it is supply chain.
Sure.
But also it's the labor shortage.
Sure. You know, kind of looking forward, obviously, as the CEO, when you're not building plexiglass shields or designing stores, you know, obviously the job of a CEO is to look forward. And so, you know, kind of whatever you can say without giving away any secrets or whatnot, you know, kind of where do you see Market of Choice and the industry maybe in the next 5 to 10 years? What do you kind of see out there for your way of life, what you do?
Well, for the next 5 years, for sure, we're just going to focus on rebuilding our stores, basically, to get the labor market back up to the level that we need to be able to operate the stores that we feel good about. Because right now, it's you know, I'm not completely satisfied the way we operate today. And I would like to get back to operating the way we did pre-pandemic. And it's going to take a lot of time.
Sure.
The labor shortage is not going to correct itself quickly. It's going to take a long time. So we need to work towards that. We need to get back to making the things that we made that made customers really excited. So, for the next 5 years, that's really where our focus is going to be. But along the way, we'll open probably at least one store, maybe two stores during that period of time. And it will be within our region. We consider local to us is if my employees who live in Eugene can go to one of my stores and then get back home in the same day without having to spend the night.
Sure.
If my trucks can deliver to a store and get back to our distribution center. So we're going to focus on infilling in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
And we have one location that we'll be opening in 2024 in Hillsboro.
Okay.
And then, you know, we've got a couple other ones we're looking at. On top of that, you know, the industry is going through a lot of transformation where the labor shortage is causing folks to figure out how to live without as much labor. There's a lot of technology involved in that. The unfortunate part for a company my size is that on the technology side, I'm at a disadvantage. Because if I have to spend money to either buy or develop some technology, I only get to spread it over the 11 stores that I have today.
Sure.
Whereas if a chain store does it and has 3,000 stores, they're going to develop that technology and spread the cost over 3,000 stores. So on the technology front, hopefully there will be some third-party vendors that will come up with some amazing things that will keep us competitive.
Sure. Kind of as we close here, I'm wondering, you know, obviously you look out into the industry and I imagine that there are a lot of trade shows and different stores you've gone to in different states or maybe even different nations. Is there something you've kind of seen out there that you're thinking, boy, you know what? That's something that I really want to bring here. Obviously, you've done a lot of that already in your evolution, but is there something maybe in Europe or something like that you've seen? This could work here.
You know, that's interesting because I do. I actually, with a group of other grocers, twice a year, we travel somewhere.
Okay.
And then we go look at all of the different kind of concepts around, not necessarily just grocery stores, but any other kind of concepts. And to be honest with you, the last few years, we haven't seen anything that inspires us that's the next great thing, because I think everybody's just been in survival mode.
Sure.
But our next trip is to Montreal, Canada. And then I believe we'll be going over to Europe sometime, trip after that, to try to find that next great thing.
Sure.
I mean, there's been some concepts. There's Eataly in New York City. The very first Eataly that made it to the United States was an amazing concept.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just bringing all of these amazing Italian food products into a store. And there's been other concepts like that around. So, I mean, there's been some small pockets of some unique things that we've seen.
Sure.
But the problem that kind of we experience no matter where we go right now is that labor shortage that we're experiencing, everybody's experienced. So nobody's putting their best foot forward right now.
Sure, I understand. The last question I'll ask, though, is that front of the store outside, you know, it's there's always been this kind of, I know in certain business circles or even in sort of, you know, kind of social engineering, there's this idea of the third place. You know, the first place is home, second place is where you work, but the third place is kind of a gathering place. And I imagine you probably think about what are some other elements of the front of the store, the outside, that we can do even more so to perhaps make it part of that third place idea?
Well, since we developed the South Eugene store, we've learned that the front of the store is a social gathering spot.
Absolutely.
And so in other locations, we've actually done things like put enough infrastructure out there so we can have live music.
Yeah.
You know, have some other events out there.
Yeah.
When we developed South Eugene, I didn't put enough power out front. I didn't put natural gas out front. I didn't put some of the things that I could use to because we didn't know that it was going to be such a fun place.
Sure.
But, you know, my my Beaverton store has a much larger space and gets to have the opportunity to have a lot of fun things out front there. So, yeah, I mean, it's creating something that doesn't feel like you're going grocery shopping.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing about it. I mean, you and I talked earlier about the fact that when I design a store, I sometimes build little dummy models of what it feels like to walk through it with a grocery cart. And I like to experiment on how, like, if you leave your cart to go shop somewhere else in the store, how far are you willing to leave your cart before it feels uncomfortable to you? So I like to play with all that type of stuff and try different things.
Well, it's obviously working. Well, thanks so much for coming in. It's always great to learn about a very uniquely Eugene company.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Great. So that was our conversation with Rick Wright, CEO of Market of Choice. So much has evolved in the grocery store industry, and Wright and Market of Choice have been right in the thick of it. This has been the Oregon Rainmakers podcast on KLCC. I'm Michael Dunn, your host. Thanks for listening and have a great day.